This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
You're listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 382, brought to you by C2E2, Paul Cornell's London Falling, and iFanboy listeners like you. Welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 382. I am Josh Flanagan, and with me is Paul Montgomery.
Hello.
And Connor Kilpatrick.
Hola.
I wish I knew more Spanish. I want to be able to respond to that with a string of Latin words. Anyway,
I just read the script. That's all, yeah, I do.
You put anything there. At iFanboy.com, we like comics. That's why we started the site. We read them, because I don't know how you could like them otherwise. I do. And I don't buy it. Every week we read a bunch of comics, and then one of us picks the best one that they read. We call that the pick of the week. That goes up on the website, ifanboy.com. And then we talk about that at the beginning of this show and other books from the week, stuff that happened, some other stuff, some questions, other blanks of the blank, depending on your subject and time frame. And that's what's going on. Before we get started, we're going to talk about what happens in these comics. So if you haven't read them, we could maybe make that experience less than for you. So come back after you've read it or forge ahead boldly. That all said, Paul, you had the pick of the week. And how'd it go?
Well, I think we can all agree that in terms of current events and comic book quality, this week was kind of a bastard. Yeah. It's kind of a shit week. But that shouldn't take away from Captain Marvel number 12, which is my pick, which might, you know, even on, you know, a really strong week would have been a big contender as well, because it was a really great issue and it just happened to be at the very bottom of my stack this week.
Shazam.
Ah.
We'll talk about him later, actually.
Oh, I didn't read this, so it's not Shazam.
No. This is the lady Captain Marvel. Oh. This is Carol Danvers.
The broad.
Yeah, and she's I wasn't going to go into gender issues, but she's a really great character, you know.
Okay. Listen, we angered some Canadians. We might want to soft pedal this one.
Okay.
Thank you,
no
guys.
Jokes this time. No jokes.
So much.
At least one person said, "I'm never listening again."
Which is fair.
Is it?
Well, it was me.
They were pretty dumb jokes, and we seem to be pretty aware that they were pretty dumb jokes. Yeah. Anyway,
go ahead,
Captain Marvel.
Oh, I don't think I'm done.
Captain Marvel number 12 by Kelly Sue DeConnick and Christopher Sabella writing. I don't know how exactly that their scripting duties break down, but they're working on it together. And then the art is Philippe Andrade, who's amazing. And I first saw on the Marvel John Carter Princess of Mars book.
Okay, that's what it was.
Yeah. Really, 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 really pretty. And it doesn't look anything like a Marvel superhero comic book.
Well, I didn't read this. I know, obviously, Paul did, and I think, Josh, you did too. But I am leafing through right now, and this is amazing. That, I mean, the art's amazing, but for, on the one hand. But the other hand, it's amazing that they allow this art on a superhero.
It's shocking,
mainstream,
right?
Mainstream superhero book.
Yeah. And actually, I believe on Twitter, Kelly Sue DeConnick said that she owed one of her editors or someone a steak for getting to 12 issues.
Well, there's that, too. That's
because she bet that they wouldn't make it. This is, I think for a lot of us.
Kept the book alive just for the stake.
starting the series, it was a bit rough, and I think the art turned a lot of people away. Now for the second arc, Philippe Andrade's on there, and that's a big part of it, and it looking so different. Like I said in Best Panels of the Week this week that it, like, if you showed me one of the establishing shots from this book that doesn't involve the superheroes, and told me that it's like from Black Sad, from like the next Black Sad book, or something European, I would have believed you. It just doesn't look like anything mainstream at all. And it's beautiful. And I've heard some people were kind of turned off by this art style. It's very unusual.
Well, you can definitely see that. I mean, it's not for everyone. It's not a mainstream style whatsoever. This is a style more at home with Image. You know, you could see this guy drawing another arc of Prophet or something like that.
Yeah, but we are tastemakers. I think it's extraordinarily beautiful, but also the story is really good. It's in this arc, Carol Danvers is grounded. There's something going on with this special Cree lobe of her brain right there in the middle of her head, and there's some kind of lesion there, and we don't know if it's cancer or something else. We actually have some clues as to what it is involving some villains, but she's been told by her doctor that you can't fly because it's only going to exacerbate the problem. And so she is stuck flying around on this Stark Tech flying Zamboni hovercraft.
It's exactly what Hawkeye used to fly around on.
Wow. Yeah. Okay, yeah. She calls it a big flying lawnmower, and she's really embarrassed by it because this is a world class pilot, and she's flown fighter jets, and she's also one of the most powerful superheroes in the world. So. There's a really nice sublime kind of metaphor here about, you know, a woman who's learned to fly and gone through all the ranks and gone through the glass ceiling and everything, and then also has become a superhero and a world-class superhero and an Avenger, and now she's being asked to stay out of the fight and stop flying. And the only way Carol Danvers would do that is if she could, you know, get away to get back in the fight without flying, so she's got this crazy doohickey that she's riding around on. And there's a Death Bird character. It's apparently not the real Death Bird. It's a character pretending to be that. I was not familiar with this character. I'm not so steeped in Captain Marvel or Miss Marvel history. But there's a great aerial battle in this. And Philippe Andrade draws the shit out of it. It's great scenes of verticality and extreme grace, and also like how awkward it would be to be a person up in the air flying around on a lawnmower, because you think in your head, like, that looks cool, you're on like a flying machine, but it would also be really awkward. So mm-hmm. I liked that was captured as well. And so there's a
on how many lawns she's mowed,
right? So a lot of great heart in this book, and then just the visual style is spectacular. Unfortunately, this is, I think, the last issue he's going to be drawing for a little while, but I read on his blog that he's going to be coming back for another arc after they do kind of an Avengers crossover thing.
Now, you've read this from the beginning?
No, actually. I jumped on. People were praising this, and I heard Philippe Andrade and that name, you know, set off a signal in my head, and I went back and read just this arc.
I feel like we back at 10 or 11.
We did. We talked about it was 10. We didn't talk about 11, but 10, yeah. And I don't know. I'm shocked and very impressed with Marvel that they let this out of the gate.
Well, I mean, I see what you're saying, but at the same time, as There's no shortage of great artists over there now.
That's absolutely true.
Yeah, but they're not that far off the beaten path style stylistically as this is.
It really is good looking. It's funny. What you said, Connor, you just said you were looking at it. I mean, that's exactly what I said when I started to read it. I was like, sheesh, who is this guy?
Right.
Yeah.
And I think for me, that was the main attraction. I can't say I love the story all that much.
Okay.
I thought.
You just hopped on this one though, right?
Hmm?
You just hopped on this issue?
Yeah. Yeah. No. Okay. So obviously there's something about that.
It does an okay job of getting you like up to speed.
I wasn't lost or anything like that. I wasn't grabbed, I suppose. The question that I had, the thing that I thought that they were leading up to, and maybe this was the case, but I just didn't catch on to it, was the fight that she was having, was that all a hallucination? I feel like we were being led to believe it was going to be, and then it wasn't.
That's a really good question, and I hadn't considered that.
Okay, good. That makes me feel better. Because at one point...
Well, no, because...
There's a very dramatic page turn where he's like something about, do you know about the hallucinations? And they cut back to her in the big fight, and I thought, well, maybe none of this is happening.
Right, there's that, but then I did think of that because then the scene with Rose, the elderly woman, and then the big reveal, big bad, who I've never actually heard of. I'm sorry.
Me neither.
Is but it whatever. They're sitting on a bench. I don't know if it's this issue or the previous issue, and they're looking up at the sky and they see it. They see the two of them fighting, and he says, "Which one should we root for?" So other characters.
Well, what if they're a hallucination?
You're in a hallucination.
What if we're all inside the kid's head from St. Elsewhere?
Who's Yon Rogg? Is that a Doctor Strange villain?
That's a Captain Marvel villain. I Wikipedia'd it. He's the original Marvel Captain Marvel villain, and also he played a big role in the accident I think that led to Carol's transformation.
Yeah, I don't know anything about her because she just showed up one day in Avengers comics. As far as I was concerned,
and, I would recommend.
But she was Warbird.
Right. Yeah. I would recommend going back to the beginning of this arc, and I think that the trade for this is coming out next month. Mm-hmm. So if you go back to the beginning of that, there's a great structure to this where she starts taking like notes. She has a calendar for each day and she crosses things off. And it's a really nice structure, and it also introduces you to her extended cast, which is great. And there's a lot of warmth to those people, and she has a cat that she takes to the vet, and it's a lot of great character stuff. And,
what happened to her mullet?
Doesn't have a lot of hair.
I think
she's back to being like the blonde bombshell hair.
I think Marvel editorial has some issues with the hair because apparently the cover for this one was also redesigned to change her face and the way her hair worked. So I think they were hearing some complaints, you know, on the forums or whatever, and decided to go back on that and give her more of a traditional hairstyle. So
there you go.
And yet this book looks like it does, and you know, so but on the covers a little
Dirty Bel Air colored it.
Yeah, beautiful colors, really. Yep. Beautiful.
Nicely slightly washed out, but the reds have a pop to them.
Yeah,
let's stay on the rank of Captain.
I did that intentionally.
Slide over to Captain America.
Brilliant.
I feel one like the, he still outranks her.
Well, yes. Well, he outranks even Havoc, who was his leader. I thank God for Captain America, one of the few books I had this week that I enjoyed. It was a bad week. But this story continues to be fun. My only concern that's something starting to creep in is that we're at issue 6.
Yeah.
And at the end of this issue, it's still to be continued.
8, I think. 7 or 8 is my guess.
7 or 8 is long, but
that's,
you know,
that's without me having any idea.
The cojones on this guy, Rick Remender.
I'm enjoying it. I just, you know, at a certain point, you know,
he's learned how to take some hits from
he can withstand
from the Fanarati.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't as drastic as, you know, Frankencastle, but yeah. It's the same kind of spirit, the same kind of idea that he's taking the character completely out of his element, and It's almost a deconstruction. I mean, he's got a beard.
It's been a decade.
Yeah, he's old.
Yeah, I like that. Although, does he age at the same rate? Anyway,
so what
I
do you,
loved
do, this. What do you think? Do you think he, you know, because eventually he's going to get back to the real world. I mean, does he remember all this?
Doesn't matter.
Okay.
I mean, I think that for a little while they'll play it out like he does, but it'll get forgotten and whatever. That's fine. Like, you know, like Avengers Forever or whatever weird thing that takes them all off into
somewhere for a while.
It's like the time Jean-Luc Picard lived a whole life in another reality, and then it was didn't count, but he had the flute. I might be mixing up two episodes. I don't know. No, that sounds right. He had kids and a beard.
Josh, talk about why you love this so much.
I like the part where he shot the girl in the face. Because I like she was completely convinced that he wasn't going to do it. And I was like,
that was a great page by Romita because it's all in her facial expression. You know, she just has this smug, self-satisfied look on her face when he's pointing the gun at her that he's never going to do it. And then just a close-up on Rogers' face as he pulls the trigger and there's a mist of blood.
The thing is that typically he wouldn't do it. But this is not a typical story. He spent 10 years in a Arnim Zola hellscape. So, you know, and it's about this story isn't about Steve Rogers in our world. This is, you know, about him in another one. And if he didn't do it, that's leaving it on the table.
Right.
Because he had to. There's no way to tell that story and not have him do it and not have it be a cop-out. Like, he's angry. It changed him. That's the whole point. So this is one of the reasons, like, I don't think it's going to remember it because I don't think it's going to be a thing that they're going to be like, remember when you killed that girl in the other dimension, Steve? But right. For this story, whatever.
Shot her in the face with a space gun?
Shot her in the face. And also, like, shot her in the face not as a way to get away from somebody, not as a way to save people.
Life. Yeah.
Just cause fuck her. Really, I mean, that's really what it was. He did it out of spite.
Yep.
And I was, you know, like, that's a bold choice. And once
it's
again,
it's scary too. It's in the same way. It's like, you know, when they do those Superman gone mad stories, they're scary. Yeah. It's the same thing with Steve Rogers when he goes to that dark place. You know, it's terrifying.
Yep.
I just don't want to be the guy in the Marvel universe who has to write the official biography of, or like ghostwrite the official biography of Steve Rogers, because his timeline is really messed up.
Well, don't forget that Steve Rogers does all sorts of things that you can't keep track of. He hates NASCAR. He keeps files on everybody. He's killed almost as many children as Batman.
Let's talk about Dean White.
I
love the coloring, especially. I'm still looking at that one page where he shot her in the face. Yeah. And I love the contrast of his hair and his sort of reddened skin.
Whatever
abuse he's taken in the atmosphere, his skin's gone kind of pinkish.
He's ruddy.
And or maybe he's just a drunk. Maybe he's just becoming drunk in the future. But I just love the contrast. This is a great looking book. We've talked about the art before, but the colors are wonderful as well.
It's funny because there's certain pages that are kind of flat. And then as the tension ramps up, the colors get a little more
intense.
Yeah, just a little more textured, I guess.
Yeah, I'm not totally into the Zola look, the Frighteners thing where he like his head comes out.
Yeah.
I'm not totally into that. But.
Well, he's evolved in this other world a lot. That's the way I look at it. I love the stained glass page.
Yes. The prayer to Zola. Yep. That's kind of cool. Creepy.
That's just good. So really, really fun. I'm with Connor. I'm not sick of it, but
I'm not sick of it either. I just would, like an endpoint.
Yeah, it's time to reel it in.
Hey, a third captain is in Captain Marvel, although we call him Shazam now, who was the backup character in Justice League. See how it all ties together?
If you want it to, yeah.
I'll find a fourth one for the next book.
See you think of that, Canada.
Yeah. I really enjoy Justice League 19.
This is a good one. There's some interesting politics going on with Wonder Woman and Superman and super sneaky Batman.
Yeah.
Just snooping on people. And he's like, I'm going to tell on you guys because you can't be canoodling. People are not going to like it. Batman's creepy.
It has that feel that you want from a Justice League book. It's a sort of a globe-trotting action story. There's great character dynamics between the members of the team, but there's also a mystery to solve. Also, you've got the new members coming in, and it reminded me a lot of Grant Morrison's story when Green Arrow showed up on the team and he had to save the day.
Yeah.
Sort of the classic way to introduce new characters to the team, and this is the same for the Atom and Firestorm who show up.
Explain her powers to me.
She shrinks.
But she can go into multiplayer online role-playing games.
The thing with the Atom characters, they always he can do strange things. He can travel through time, through telephone lines, which don't exist anymore. Apparently, she can go into the atoms of a video game and play it. Who knows?
This
that
is does,
that doesn't make sense.
This is like in the last issue where he had the fight with the serpent guy.
Serpentor.
No.
Yeah, it was Serpentor.
No, it wasn't.
Serpentor.
That's from G.I. Joe.
This I command.
This.
The snake guy, and the snake guy said, you know, I can't hear you.
That was Snake Eyes.
No, it wasn't. It was not.
Did at any point did he invent pizza? No.
There's three pieces, see?
Here's another thing I like. Okay, so we have to deal with all of these scenes of Batman and Alfred being sad about Damian being dead.
Right.
And you know, I'm not a huge Jason Todd fan, but I kind of like in the scene with Jason Todd that he doesn't know how to deal with Alfred being sad. And he's like, can you get him some tea or something? Like, that would make you feel better, right? You're English.
Yeah, but I also like the fact that he felt, because they get attacked and Alfred gets beaten up, and that he still feels guilty in the face of Batman. Like, I know you're disappointed in me. Like, he no matter what he does, he's still the son that's just craving the attention, which was always the fuel for Jason's fire. You know, he's never been had the approval he wanted, so he still can't break free of that.
Wasn't he literally like the red-haired stepchild of the Robin family? Like, I think that's the metaphor they were going for.
Bruce,
the actual Bruce, shock of red hair.
Bruce dyed his hair black, yes. But I like this quite a bit. And also the backup story continues to be pretty great. I thought the palpable fear in Billy was really strong in this issue.
And also,
he just doesn't want to be Captain Marvel or Shazam. He does not want to fight Black Adam. He's just he will do anything to not be in this position, but he's in it.
And also playing up the fact, and so Black Adam's a kid, right? Like, so he's also a kid.
He's basically the evil kid version of
which makes sense.
Yeah.
And I like this little ensemble of all the kids in the Batson family and really playing that up. And so there's not quite a Runaways vibe to it, but I kind of like that it's coming from it's a kid's philosophy and how they see how absurd, you know, the adult world is and all the fighting and superhero stuff. And they just want, you know, to have fun.
Yep.
So I'm excited. I was excited to see they're doing a collection of that, of just the Shazam story.
I have no Captain segue to Daredevil, but all of you say that Chris Samnee is the captain of art.
Tip of the cap.
Tip of the cap to Chris Samnee.
And Mark Waid. Josh, you really like this, Josh. This was close.
On a week that has Chris Samnee getting pretty much the only mainstream Eisner artist nomination for penciler inker.
Didn't David Aja get one?
Yeah, him too. Yeah. But I could equivocate here for a while, but I'm not going to. I'm just going to move on. I just thought with this issue, I thought he put on a clinic. Mm-hmm. Over and over, you know, he's been good in this all along, but I think as he's really settling into a groove with this book, you're seeing really great things on these pages. And there were numerous, like, this was one of those things where we're reading through our books and we're always looking for stuff that we can put in our best of the week in panels. And there were like a dozen examples of things that you could have said something about.
Just, you know, I almost suggested that we do a Daredevil only best panels feature, because we could have very easily done it.
Mm. The one that I pulled out to feature is, you know, he's swinging over the Brooklyn Bridge and the bridge behind him is upside down. And I was like, how come I've never thought of that before? Like, right. how come we haven't seen that 100 million times? But just that force, that perspective of, you know, where Matt is as opposed to the world.
And it wouldn't, that wouldn't bother him because he can't see, right? So, yeah. I mean, you have your internal equilibrium. Brian will have to weigh in on this, but isn't part of it your vision and grounding yourself? So,
yeah, and it's just your orientation of the thing that you're used to. And when you throw that too far out of whack, it makes it hard to get your bearings. But if you go to the next page, like, that whole next page, every single panel on that next page is great. From the first one, that's a silhouette of the kid dying, to then the split of Matt's head as he goes through all of his different senses, to then the reflection on the one after that, the cracking reflection, and then that gorgeous, you know, red silhouette bit at the bottom. Like, that whole page, I mean, look at that. That's an award-winning page.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you keep going, then you keep going, you go to the next page, and you've got, you know, all these hand-drawn sound effects as you're going through there, and the panels are breaking into these things where he's focusing on little different parts, his hands or his, you know, his radar sense and eyes and things like that. And then you get into this really brutal fight that sort of lasts for a really long time. It's a ninja fight, And, you know, this is reminding me of Frank Miller on Daredevil more than any of the other stuff that we've gone through. You know, whenever we're reading Paulo Rivera and going, this looks great, I never thought this reminds me of Frank Miller. And it isn't like he's aping him or anything. He's just taking elements of it that are fantastic. And as I just went through this, it's a gorgeous book, and it feels like Daredevil in a way that I don't think, even the more traditional way, but by pulling in some more of those elements of how they were showing how Matt experiences the world. But if you just like little, like when he's in the sports store and he pulls on the sprinkler, and the guy's sneaking around and he thinks I've got him now. And they use three really quick panels to show him reach for the baseball bat.
Yes.
And that's really interesting pacing. And then you get that killer last panel where, you know, try the red one. So at first I'm reading this and I'm just thinking, wow, Chris Somney's really tearing it up on art. And then by the end I was like, you know, I wasn't even paying attention. But by the end, Mark Waid had put together a hell of a script and a single issue story also.
And a great new villain.
Yeah.
I mean, what a jerk. He's wearing his dad's robe.
It continues to be a wonderful book, and no disrespect to the original artists who we gushed over completely, but this team working together makes me forget that they weren't on the book the whole time.
I think it took them a little bit.
Yeah, it did.
To transition, and now, you know, now it's something else that's real good, but it's still real good.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah, this is a sweet spot. I mean, the training stuff with Stick.
Oh,
what a, also a jerk.
Stick's a jerk. That's his charm. Now, if you told me I can't even say 3 months ago because I don't know if Nova's coming out monthly or what. But if you told me 3 issues ago that I would be loving the Nova series, I would have called you a liar. But I am. I really love this book, and just because we know things about how things work, and how closely tied in the movies and the comics are now, you know. This is clearly the setup for Nova as a character that's going to be a big deal in the movies, because they've turned this new character into the Spider-Man-esque version of Nova, and it's working out really well.
That's a really good point. You know what? It's a wonderful refreshment is how I put it. no, it's just, it's wonderfully effervescent. And,
no, it is. It's fun. It's got that spark of the young hero learning the ropes, but in a really fun, not at all dark way. And it's the tone, tonally not like a lot of other books. There are other books that are light like this, but not, you know, we're still in that everything must be serious and dark mode. And this is not like that at all. It's not all ages side, but it's still, it's fun. It's just super fun.
You guys are still looking at Daredevil.
Well, continue to do that.
That's fine. I mean, this was great. It was thirst quenching. We had a great scene with the Watcher and how weird that character is, and then and then just flicking Nova to the other edge of the galaxy. It was by Jupiter, right? Is this invasion force is coming, and
the Chitauri again. I think this is, I mean, if you, I can see them introducing Rocket Raccoon and Gamora in Guardians of the Galaxy, and then taking this story and using it as a basis for introducing Nova, because it, you know, everything sort of ties in, and then the Chitauri are there, and Jeff Loeb, the writer of this book, is also an executive at Marvel Studios. I can very much see this being the basis for how they introduce Nova as their movie Spider-Man.
Yes,
when you say the Chitauri, I automatically think of the Nemoidians.
And I mean, they have the big the like space whale things, the slugs that were in the Avengers movie.
I know who they are, but when I try to picture it in my head, I just see, oh no, there are two of them down there.
There's a lot of space whales coming.
Yeah, I know, but it's just like they're not even like they're not even just like Marvel, you know, ambiguous kind of space aliens. These are the characters from the movie, and so that they're headed that way. And I like that idea that it's this kid, and it's not just like a young man. This is a kid, and he's being like forced into the deep end of the pool with the Watcher and being sent to the far end of the universe. And that's kind of cool. It's very like 80s sci-fi movie.
Yeah, I enjoy it.
I was surprised he was the one in the Ultimate Spider-Man cartoon.
Yeah.
That's me catching up a year
they're paving the way.
Yeah, they're really laying it down for Nova. He's going to be... I think that's what I think.
So you're saying there are not two of them.
No.
There would be one.
Josh, tell me what I would be doing if I was traveling next week.
Oh, well, if you were traveling, and I recommend. I was worried for a second. I was like, I don't know. Oh, you would go to C2E2, which is the premier Comic Con in Chicago. That's next weekend. This is a big one, I think. Yeah. I think
it's becoming a bigger
here.
And bigger and bigger
yes,
show.
This is
the first big show of the season. I think and people take it pretty seriously. It's going to be all sorts of announcements and stuff that we've heard coming up, so you're going to want to pay attention. But if you're in the area, you want to be April 26th, 28th in Chicago at the West Building of the McCormick Place. Comic guests include Brian Azzarello, Kieran Gillen, Rick Remender, Paul Cornell, Amanda Connor, Andy Diggle, Chris Burnham, Brian Wood, Jim McCann, John Layman, Mike Norton, Tony Moore, and tons more in the biggest artist alley at any convention. If comic guests aren't your bag or that's not enough for you, then they've also got a lot of stars from entertainment. Adam West, Brian Posehn, Julie Newmar, The Walking Dead cast, not all of them, some of them, and a bunch of wrestlers like Diamond Dallas Page and Jake the Snake Roberts, who had snakes on his shiny pants. Don't get left out if you haven't bought your tickets in advance. You can buy your tickets for advance, but you can try to get them at the door. A 3-day pass is only $55 if you pre-order or $65 at the show. But again, buying in advance is going to guarantee you entry, but the door, maybe not. Maybe it'll be so important. Maybe the Jake the Snake fan club will be there. You don't know. Get to C2E2.com to order your tickets and all the other information about the show, the panel listings and things like that. And you'll see everybody else is going to be there. Again, that's April 26th to the 28th in Chicago at the West Building at McCormick Place. C2E2. It'll be a good time.
I was talking to a creator and they were telling me that this is becoming the new show for creators. Like they're eschewing San Diego for this show.
I can see that. Hmm.
So it's becoming bigger and bigger. The first year we went, it wasn't so big, but it's getting bigger and bigger as we go. So C2E2, check it out.
Definitely. I just wanted to mention really quickly, BPR, I hate these titles. BPRD, Hell on Earth, A Cold Day in Hell, Part 2, number 106, whatever.
Man and X-Men.
I think it's BPRD in Hell on Earth, number 106, A Cold Day in Hell, Part 2.
Yeah, but it's actually BPRD 106.
It's stupid. Man and X-Men.
Yeah, it is. They changed the paradigm, so they had to write Hell on Earth in there. And I feel like they're stuck with it now. And if I was the editor, I would just yank that.
Because it looks really intimidating.
It does. It does. It doesn't help expand their base. But what does is that one of my favorite artists has been doing this little mini, which is only, I think it's a two-issue, was Peter Snaberg, a guy who I don't see his work enough.
Yeah, where's he been since the Alpha One book?
Sweden? Probably doing paying work on European books?
Probably.
I mean, and who can blame
or
him?
Or anything else?
Yeah, anything. Almost anything. He's a very accomplished illustrator. But he did it. He showed up here, and he's got that great clean style. And I really like this new character, the Russian director guy, who's sort of a zombie, I guess. He's dead, but he's in a suit. And his body won't die, and they've reintroduced Vivara, who's the terrifying little Russian child doll vampire thing, and she's very scary. And this is just a fun little story of one of the agents out in Russia, and I think it'll have larger consequences. But it was really nice looking, too.
Mara number 4 by Brian Wood, Ming Doyle, Jordi Belair. This is, I think, the best looking issue so far. And also this is, you know, the continuing story of this girl who she's a professional volleyball player in the near future, far future. I don't know. But it's a real, you know, it sort of pains me to say like a grant what it would really be like to be a superhero. But I think Brian Wood is of the sensibility that he can pull that off and it actually does feel like, you know, what it would be like. And he's also, and the far future thing adds a little bit of an element to it. So it doesn't have to be. It doesn't have to feel entirely photoreal to the culture of today. God, that sounds boring. This is a really interesting book. So the Mara character, she's had these latent abilities and she's becoming more and more like this Superman or almost. I don't even know if she might be heading toward.
Is this the sports book?
This is the one that people are like, I thought this was the volleyball book. She has other parts of, you know, her life. She plays volleyball and she plays volleyball at the end there. Or that just might be a pinup. That's a guest pinup. I'm sorry. She's flying into space at the end. That's quite different from playing volleyball. And basically she's with this agency that's sort of like SHIELD. They even have kind of a helicarrier and they're basically telling her, you know, you're going to be our secret weapon. You're going to be sort of like, you know, in the original JSA Liberty Files, where like Superman was this like totally secret weapon that they brought out, and it totally changed the game and the war and everything. Mara, the idea is she's like their trump card. She's like the thing, like yeah, exactly. And I'm thinking, is she headed that way in terms of her powers, and is she transforming? But the big thing is this government agency, they're ostensibly getting rid of her as a citizen, and she's just going to be this person that stays at their facility, and when they need to have a dick swinging contest with another country, they say, we got our superhero, she's going to mess you up, and then they back down. And so she basically has to stay there, and they're not even going to tell anyone where she is or that she's alive or dead. And the big thing is she has a brother who's in the military, and she's very concerned, like, what is he going to think? He's not going to, you know, stop until he finds me. You have to at least tell him about it. Can I go and talk to him? And no, we're not going to let you do that. And so it's a lot of political intrigue and burgeoning superpowers, and it's going interesting places, but no, not a lot of volleyball. Sorry.
Was there volleyball in Little Depressed Boy 16?
There wasn't. This was one that
I feel like that'd be a book there would be volleyball in.
Yeah.
But he wouldn't like it.
No.
He would be used as the volleyball because he's made out of like a soft thing.
He does look like that.
Yeah, he's a rag doll. So I mentioned this in Light Week, hoping that this would be, you know, some kind of warmth and warm and fuzzies on a week that was kind of shit from the beginning. And this was maybe not the best issue to recommend as heartwarming and fun. Not a whole lot of levity in this one. This is Little Depressed Boy, LDB, is dating his manager at a movie theater. And there's a guy who also works at the movie theater, and he sees them canoodling, sort of like Batman in Justice League 19. And tells on them, and then they have to talk to the big boss, and he says, well, you're not supposed to be fraternizing. A manager should not be, you know, dating one of her underlings. That opens
this
up.
This is the HR issue.
It's a whole HR issue. It's really an issue about HR. And by the end, they walk away. They're not fired, but they're suspended from their job, and they go to bed together, and she's facing the wall, and he's looking up at the ceiling, and it looks like she's not too happy about the status quo, and does she value the relationship enough to, you know, let it go against her job, her, you know, even if it's being a manager at a movie theater.
Well, I question your categorizing this book as a fun book, because all I've ever heard of it has been depressing. Because it's got it in the title.
It's bittersweet. It's like it's on the opposite end of the spectrum from Scott Pilgrim. Scott Pilgrim's on uppers, this one's on downers. But they're both romantic and about music and relationships, and there's a sweetness to it. This happens to be an issue where they're on the real downturn, and hopefully brighter days ahead for Little Depressed Boy.
It's called Depressed.
It's partially ironic. I don't know. It's the challenge.
I don't think it is. I think it's Depressed.
It's like Charlie Brown. Charlie Brown in the Peanuts. Like Charlie Brown is kind of like in real life. Charlie Brown would have killed himself many decades ago. But he's also it's about triumphing over that. And I'll get the little red haired girl one of these days.
Speaking of triumphing over things in a title that sounds hopeful but is not, let us go to Revival number 9.
Let's do that.
One of the many books that Mike Norton is drawing. Or drawing part of. And this is, I've spoken of this before and I just wanted to check in again. I really like this book. I think there's a really large cast and a sort of big swirling story. It's a big story, but it's made small because this town has been quarantined. And we ended up with a really sort of harrowing cliffhanger at the end of it. And you're just getting to know these people more, and they're sort of small town, the way that their relationships swirl in and out of each other. There's like a lot of plates in the air for this book. And it's just sort of I'm not reading anything like it. And I don't know if enough people are.
Feels like a TV show.
A little.
It feels I don't know.
Yeah.
Which I guess
they've been selling it. Yeah.
Okay. Well, this was my first one.
And that was a mistake.
Yes. But maybe not. Because I want to go back and read the rest because I thought this was great characterization and like
right.
A huge cast and
it's really I think technically and craft wise is really well done and it's really interesting. And the good thing is, by having read this, you don't, you're not really, you didn't lose anything.
No, I'm not going to remember some of the plot
beats. No, but even so, like, it's not about plot twists really so much. It's about, you know, this on your, if you look, there's a ton of words on these pages, but it doesn't read slow. It reads really interesting.
It's like,
I really like the scene between the sheriff and the gun nut guy.
It's like a redneck soap opera kind of thing. There's a lot of relationships, it seems. And
yeah. Yeah, it's good. It's fun.
It's good. I'm going back.
A different kind of zombie, because there's not enough.
Bandette number four, which, what's the milestone on this for the
I believe
for the Osners first digital?
It feels like the first digital comic that's been put up against sort of regular old print comics, because it's digital only. There's no print version of it yet, which is really, this is like when a Pixar movie gets put up for Best Picture, and they're like, oh, you know. Ooh.
And you know what? Pixar is kind of a good touchstone there, because this is Paul Tobin and Colleen Coover. This is a Monkey Brain book. I went back because I saw it on the list and I was like, this looks kind of interesting. And people were talking about the fourth issue being this week. And I think you can go on Comixology and you can pick up issue one for free.
That's correct.
During the time before they announce the winners, I guess.
You do not need an iPad. You just need a computer.
Yeah, I read it on my laptop and then I read the other three. And it's about a French burglar. with a heart of gold, and it's you know, it's French, so there's a French cat burglar, who sort of reminds me of, oh, is it the Silver Fox, that Spider-Man one, and so he's like an older guy. He's called.
I love that character.
And then she's Bandette, and she has these urchins who help her out when she's in trouble, and also the police detective, our commissioner calls her in when there's trouble, and he doesn't know how to solve it, even though she is a burglar, but I guess her first. You know, in the first issue, the first person she went after was, I think he was a crime boss, and he had a bunch of Rembrandts, and she was stealing the paintings, but they didn't belong to him in the first place. And then also brings up another sort of interesting thing. I don't know exactly. I guess it's for adults, because the first scene, she catches him having sex. So it's a bit bawdy for young readers. Well, I guess it, you know, depends.
You mean the ones who are sexting all the time?
That's true. Well, I mean that the super
younglings,
all
I know about the
younglings,
people, the sexting all the time.
Like it's you know, it's that watercolor kind of style and very cute, and so you'd think maybe this is for a very young audience, but not really. Even though it has sort of it's young at heart kind of thing, and you know, a little bit of Tintin in there. Not super substantial story, kind of a trifle in the way it's, but it's fun and clever, and she fights a matador in this one.
Strong.
It's kind of neat. Check it out. I mean, the first one's free.
So those are the books of the week. We had some trouble putting this list together, I'll be honest. We had to pad it out. But there's other books that came out. You can talk about them at ifanboy.com/comics, where you can go make your pull list every week. You can rate and review your books, and you can choose your own pick of the week. And we run down the top five picks of the week as chosen by the users. Number five, Daredevil, End of Days, number seven, with 3.5% of the votes. And these are votes at the time of recording. Four was Wonder Woman 19 with 4.6%. Three was The Superior Spider-Man number 8 with 6.1% of the votes. Number two, Justice League 19 with 15.3%. And the runaway number one choice from the users was Daredevil number 25 with 51.2% of the picks of the weeks. So there you go. Also at ifanboy.com/comics, you can write a user review, and we'd like to read a couple of those in the show. First up is Ghost Man, who reviewed Wonder Woman 19. He gave a story of 5 out of 5 and the art of 4 out of 5. And as we said previously, Wonder Woman 19 and 4.6% of the pick of the week votes. Ghost Man's review says, reading Wonder Woman these last 19 months has been great. The story taking place feels so much removed from the oppressive and tedious ones playing out right now in DC's New 52 universe. It amazes me that Azzarello has been able to keep the barbarians at the gate while crashing in for so... Oh! It amazes me that Azzarello has been able to keep the barbarians at the gate from crashing in for so long. Diana's characterization is light years away from that of her in Justice League, her doppelganger there. Wherein Wonder Woman is, I can't position this behind the microphone anymore, is what I've learned from this from review. I've got to move to the side. Diana's characterization is light years away from that of her in Justice League, wherein Wonder Woman is being played out for those 14-year-old fanboys' attention spans. Not here in her own title, though. Here the Amazon's portrayed in such a strong-willed and caring and empowering manner that I feel this should be mandatory reading for all new coming comic readers, both male and female. This comic shows us that tits and ass does not a superhero make. Female superhero make.
This was actually a really lengthy review.
That's really
review.
Rough for you, Don.
I had positioned the laptop behind the pop screen of my microphone, and was thus reading it through that, and that was a problem.
And this is just a small section of the review. I really appreciate the thought Ghostman put into this, and he also reviewed Justice League. I think actually the metaphor might be Azarella is the barbarians at the gate.
Probably. Yeah. Yes.
Although I don't know about handing a new comics reader. Here's 2 years of comics.
I wouldn't hand them Wonder Woman. No.
No. Also, Azarello isn't going to spoon feed you anything, so good luck.
And again, I really like the sort of, not will they, won't they, but interesting kind of sexual tension between Orion and Wonder Woman.
Did she grab his junk in the room with all the other people?
Yes.
Yeah.
But not in a fun way. In an awful way.
Depends on what you think of as fun.
I liked the reveal.
You think about how Orion grew up, and
he might be into it. I liked the reveal when his face turned into the Kirby angry face.
Yeah,
good issue.
All right, and then Harpier writes of Francesco Francavilla's The Black Beetle, No Way Out, number 3, story 3 out of 5, art a 5 out of 5. Pick of the week percentage 1.8%. As ever, Francavilla's artwork and design is immaculate. His color schemes are beautiful and variable, and his visual pacing perfectly matches his storytelling. Each issue has had a slightly different panel design preference, and here it exploits the box both within and across the page boundary to great effect. However Francavilla may conclude his pulp mystery, he's certainly established a tone and aesthetic with storytelling legs, and a hero whose own mystery is even more intriguing than his quarries. I'll be interested to see where he takes his character next, because it's sort of like, it feels like a character that would have a long backstory, because he's like a pulpy character, but he's just starting out with them, sort of. I mean, he's used them before, but
there's a lot of ground to cover.
There's a lot of ground to cover with that, and the stuff I've read a bit of this, and the stuff that he's doing with the secret identity is quite interesting. It's not super clear cut. Interesting book.
You can go to ifanboy.com/comics. You can write your own user review and perhaps get it in the show if it's good. This episode is sponsored by London Falling, the new novel from Paul Cornell. London Falling is the new urban fantasy novel by Wolverine Saucer Country writer Paul Cornell. It's the story of a unit of modern undercover police in London who accidentally gained the power to see the magic and the monsters and decide to use real police tactics against them. It's out now from Tor Books. It's been recommended by authors like Greg Rucka and George R. R. Martin. He's some little unknown writer I've never heard of. I bet you try to read this in a British accent and that you're going faster than you normally would. May cause sudden death and supernatural beings. Ask your doctor if London Falling is right for you. Nice try, Paul Cornell.
He thought I was going to read it, but I didn't.
You can get this book through iFanboy. We've got a special link for you. We'll put it on the website, but I'll read it out for you. It's http://ifn.by/pcornell. That's Cornell. To get London Falling by Paul Cornell, and I recommend it. I've got it on my
IFB.by.
Oh, look, Paul, it's Michael Caine's come to read it.
We'll keep that at the bottom of your screen throughout the rest of this episode.
P. Cornell.
So check it out. London Falling.
Let's read the book in a month.
For which month?
It was April still.
You can no longer lord it over us that you've never blown a deadline of book of the month.
Just one, though. Just one.
Well, you chose an interesting one.
I did. I went with Peanut, written by Ian Halliday and illustrated by Paul Hoppe. H-O-P-P-E.
Hoppe.
Hop. From Schwartz and Wade Books. So this is a quote-unquote real book from a non-comics publisher, but it's a YA graphic novel. And you might be asking yourself, but Josh, this doesn't speak to my very specific demographic, and that's true. This is a like I said, it's a YA book. It's a story about a girl who changes schools in high school and gets it in her head that she is going to tell everybody her special thing about her is going to be that she's deathly allergic to peanuts and she was almost killed by one time. And of course, being the way that high school can be, it sort of spirals out of control, and she loses track of all the different sort of lies that she's telling, and the new friends, and the stuff that's going on, and it's probably going to get discovered, and then she has to deal with the fallout from that. It's really sort of a basic high school kind of story. It's sort of done with young adults and also adults in mind when it's made. So it's not very heavy, but it's sort of charming. And as I was going through it, first of all, when I sort of got this. I was looking through it, and I just don't read a lot of comics like this anymore. And it felt like as we were going through the 2000s, you know, the term of indie comic was always like, oh, it's just going to be some like sort of high school autobio. It's not autobio, but it may as well be. I was just sort of charmed by it. I was like, I like stories like these. I've been reading them lately.
Well, it's interesting because you used to always say you didn't like stories like those. You weren't really interested in high school tales anymore. And whenever Ron or I brought up a book that was in that genre or framework, you always said it wasn't for you anymore.
I know what you're saying. I think I mean more like the sort of tone of a graphic novel that's sort of just about some people, mm-hmm. Done in a cartoon style, and okay. It's sort of I've gotten. I like some sort of simple cartoon stories sometimes, and okay. I feel like I haven't been reading any lately. So it kind of brought me back. It made me think of some of the sort of indie books that I really liked, you know, a while ago, and how I haven't really found anything like that in a bit. You know, the thing that got me right away, like I said, was the art. This Paul Hopp, it's fairly straightforward cartooning, but one of the things I found really interesting is that there's a bunch of characters in here, and they all look completely distinct from one another. You don't get people mixed up. It's not that thing where people draw just a guy. The main character, Sadie, is always shown wearing something red, either when it's her shirt or her sweatshirt on top of it. Like she's always – so all the pages are pretty much in black and white. But
that
she's
is helpful
always,
in these books.
It really is. You're not really aware of it when you're reading it, but it's sort of always there as a helpful signpost on a given page. But even so, like – and it's not like the characters are drawn sort of strangely or whatever. They're just distinct enough that you sort of always know who they are, and you're able to keep track of a lot of people at once, even though they don't have superhero costumes on.
Is the book set in Smallville?
No, it's just
that could explain it as well.
Let me ask you this:
yeah,
how does it hold up to the harrowing saga of Bill Haverchuck's peanut allergy on Freaks
and Geeks? It's not as funny.
Not as fun, yeah.
But there was definitely some it was familiar in that part where if you remember he was slipped a peanut by the bully whose name I can't remember, but he's one of the scariest bullies in the history of TV. Until
he's
not.
One of the most real bullies in the history of TV.
Totally is,
because he's also a loser.
Yeah,
not like a jock.
Exactly. And he reminds me of bullies from when I was a kid. Anyway, that's
Quincy
that's
is the actor's name. There. I remember that.
And Bill is slipped a peanut because the guy doesn't believe him,
right?
And then he ends up in the hospital because he'd gone into anaphylactic shock. But in this one, basically, the girl is out and she sees somebody with a medic alert bracelet. She's like, that medic alert bracelet looks really cool, because kids are always looking for something that will differentiate themselves from anything else. Then the girl goes on to explain to her how she is allergic to peanuts, and that's why she wears the bracelet. And she gets this idea. And sort of blurts it out like she's trying to find something to say about herself. So she says, "Oh, I'm allergic to peanuts and I almost died," and then has to tell everybody that. And there's the mean girls. It's not Shakespeare, but it's enjoyable. I read it sort of in one sitting, and I went through it, and I thought that was just refreshing, and it was interesting. But even more so, you know, maybe you listening to this right now are not the audience for this book, and that's fine. But there is an audience for this book, and it's probably somebody you know. And like, this is the kind of thing that can get people to read comics. If you had a teenager, a preteen, you know, niece or nephew or son or daughter, and you wanted to read something, you can try this one. The book's really nice. Like, it's got a great sort of design on the cover. It looks like a book that's going to be cool to read and pick up, and you don't get like a comic book stereotype about it. It's just a fun story about real people, and I dug it. I haven't had this flavor in a long time, it feels like, which is certainly on me to a certain extent. But, you know, you get wrapped up in all this other stuff that we end up paying a lot of attention to. And then sometimes it's nice to dial it back. And I'm going to try to do that a little more often.
Good.
Bill Haverchuck was bullied by Jack Klugman?
Yes.
Yes.
Wow.
I guarantee you that he watched Quincy all the time.
He had a great bike.
Oh, Haverchuck, definitely.
Definitely.
Definitely. So you can go to fanboy.com. You can read Josh's full Book of the Month review there for the next 2 weeks anyway. Who's up next? I believe it's Paul.
Email.
No, I believe you're up next. Let's not steamroll over this.
What?
I believe you have the next Book of the Month, don't you?
Oh, yeah, I do.
You know what it's going
to
be?
Yeah, I do.
Oh, okay. Exciting.
Knowing is half the battle.
Paul, read the first email.
Email. Rob writes, I'm going on my honeymoon in a couple of months, and I know I'm going to have a lot of time sitting on a beach, so I'm looking for a good series to read. I know you get this question a lot, and I've answered it a good amount of times in the podcast, but I always take that input and read that stuff. All right. This is a very short answer. Don't take comics on your honeymoon. Make love to your spouse.
I just think it's funny. He's clearly never been married before because he thinks he's going to get through some pages without being asked to do some shit.
Even when I go on vacation and it's just me, I don't, and I bring books, I never get to read them. I'm always doing something else.
Yeah. So, I find, and this is going to sound sacrilegious, but unless you're talking about digital, I find that comics are not the best thing for traveling. They're very heavy for the amount of time that you get out of them.
That's true. You finish them really quickly, and you got to carry that goddamn book around the rest
of
the
time. And then the light ones, if you have them on the beach, they're of such paper stock that they're going to wilt.
Or dissolve.
Yeah.
Plus, you should be making sweet love to your lady.
I agree with the sweet love part.
I mean, this is what wordy. You should be doing, you know? Do
you
it on the beach.
Take Crisis on Infinite Earths. That'll take you the whole time to read. Read Watchmen again. Seriously, if you haven't read it, read it for the first time. If you haven't read it for a while, read it again. It's one book. It's pretty dense. It'll sort of it's close to novel speed.
Or Bring Sex by Joe Casey.
There's a longer email and he has like listed some things that he likes, and he said all the, you know, the greatest hits, and, you know, Scalped and Why the Last Man, and all the stuff we'd usually recommend. But I wanted to bring this up not to give him grief, but just to talk about bringing comics on vacation, which I don't think it's a good idea. Look around. Maybe there'll be comics there. You can find them. Maybe
I like it.
Maybe you're going on a honeymoon in Belgium. There's a great comic book scene in Belgium. You're probably not going to Belgium.
I'm here to stand up for comics. I'm here to recommend comics. I'm here to do that thing. They are not your best vacation friend. There
it's
it is.
True.
I said it. It's a weakness of the form.
You made a good point. For the amount of weight you carry, the amount of reading time is very low. Bring a novel.
I agree. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Actually, been on those trips where you bring a bunch of comics, you read them all the first day, mm-hmm. and then what do you got? You got nothing.
You got 30 pounds of books you got to carry back with you and pay extra baggage fees on because you bought all this t-shirt. I'm going to go with Sweet Love and making it.
Make the Sweet Love on the beach.
You know, if you're going to have a tablet or a laptop anyway to take with you, modern conveniences, maybe check out, you know, some like the Eisner nomination list and grab some of that stuff if you can get it digitally. And that way,
it's a lot of stuff this year that you probably haven't heard of, is my guess. And from people who have heard of it, they're very happy. They think there's some really good stuff in there.
Yes.
So maybe use that as a buying list and try some things out.
Or what you could do is you could do what Josh did in his honeymoon: get a really bad sunburn the first day.
That was day four. I had a cold
the rest
for
of the
first
trip.
Ooh, I had a cold for the first 3 days because of my wife's Aunt Susan.
So there you go. Tony from Los Angeles, California writes and says, as it gets closer to the June release date of Man of Steel, there'll most likely be even more hype on Superman. What comics and graphic novels or runs would you consider must-reads for those who aren't too in touch with Superman? Thanks.
I know what Connor's going to say.
Wait a minute. Yeah.
What?
How did you get a cold from your Aunt Susan?
She was at the wedding and she had a cold.
All right.
She was the one who I remember, and she like kissed me on the cheek and I was like, oh.
It was your Aunt Susan.
No, it wasn't mine. It was
her Aunt Susan?
Yeah.
Okay. Nothing fishy going on.
Not really.
She wasn't like the Lord of the Land and she got to bed Josh before his wife did.
Prima Nocta?
Yeah.
I mean, that happened.
Was that not normal?
I mean, you were there, you know.
I was there, but I was
busy. You had to hold the camera.
I think that almost happened to Woody on Cheers.
I was there. I was too busy fishing your brother out of the gutter.
Literally. He's not kidding about that. My brother literally passed out in the gutter at my wedding.
Yeah.
All right. So Connor's not been able to shut up about Superman's secret identity.
That is true. And I actually forgot to list that one in my little mental list. But there's a lot of great Superman stories. My favorite origin story is Man of Steel. But it looks like the movie is going to be based partially on Birthright. So
it looks like
it. And Birthright, which is by Mark Waid and Neil Francis Yu.
That's the Yes for Hope is from Birthright.
And the whole thing about "You're Still My Son" line from the trailer,
sure.
Which is great. There's also Superman Red Son for a little Elseworlds action when Superman lands in Russia, is raised by the communists to become a weapon against the West.
And that's Miller, right?
S. Miller and Dave Johnson doing interiors.
I weirdly like that for a Miller book.
Oh, that's one of Miller's best things.
It's really good.
He's got some wins.
He does. Yeah. He does. I'm
of course, All-Star Superman, Morrison, yep. Quietly. Then Secret Identity, which is Busick and Immonen, which is Superman in the real world, which is interesting. And then there's Kingdom Come, which is basically a Superman story, even though it features everybody.
Yeah, it's basically Superman's point of view.
It's a Superman tale. It's about him, really.
And The Dark Knight Strikes Again.
No. Connor, we were talking a while back, I think, when they had the trailer out for the new Superman Unbound, which is coming out next month, that animated one. We were talking about Jeff Johns.
Oh, right, all those
and
Jeff
Gary
Johns
Frank action comics stuff. And I really like Superman and the Legion of Superheroes.
Yes.
That's a really good story. That's Superman is, you know, so he's in the future and he's on another planet, so he doesn't have access to his powers. Yeah. And he has to rely on his superpowered friends in the Legion. And that's a great book. Looks great.
Superman Brainiac is the...
Yeah.
I think it's the follow-up to the Legion of Superheroes, I believe.
It's after it, at least. And there's a spoiler alert, Pa Kent dies. And that was the big controversy where they had the cover and he was maybe drinking beer and they turned it into like a pop can.
Mm. Yeah.
Superman needs a drink sometimes.
Deserves it. It's not like it's going to affect him negatively.
Yeah. No. And that's the source material for Superman Unbound, which I'm very excited for. Yeah. And we will be talking about.
Those are some good Superman books for you. That'll keep you in books until June, which is when the movie comes out, about a month from now. You can email us at contact@ifanboy.com to get your letter on the show, or you can call our voicemail line at 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697 to also get the show. Remember, for both things, tell us who you are and where you're from. We like to know where everyone's from. Like Tony. Tony did it correctly. Rob did not.
Whoa.
There you go.
He's nervous.
Josh, tell us in many ways. Josh, tell us about Make Comics.
Yeah, there's actually going to be one this week, I promise. There you go.
Yeah,
Make Comics podcast for me
this
and Andy.
Is this the Fabled covers issue?
Yeah. I don't know if you guys were around Monday, but there was a lot going on. Yeah. So it didn't make it up. And I'll get it up this week. That's the covers one. It's me and Andy Schmidt talking about how to make comics from various different perspectives, depending on the discipline that you choose to make them in.
And if you don't already have it and haven't put it in your ear holes, under this in the feed, there's a Booksplode number 8, number 2 in the new batch, about, Josh mentioned, Dark Knight Strikes Again. Contentious, loony, weird. We talked about that.
You and Josh and Jeff Reed making the podcast debut, talking about the controversial sequel to The Dark Knight Returns, and
talked about it for a good old hour. And I put some bat noises in there for music. It's a fun one. I think that turned out really good.
It was a really interesting and fun conversation.
Yeah, and Josh is lucid for some of it. Other times he says it's his favorite book ever.
That was expressed.
Explicitly say that.
I've had personal conversations with you when you've expressed similar sentiments.
It was more than that, though. It's more than that time.
He likes the moxie of Dark Knight Strikes Again.
I do. I do. I appreciate the punk rockitude of it.
All right. So check out ifanboy.com for the pick of the week review. And more in-depth comic book stuff and all the you guys and your script stuff. And all the important news and discussion
you
topics.
You did the script.
You did the script.
This is your script.
Well, this is
you're
from
no
an old script. I copied and pasted. I don't know what noun it wanted there where you put balls. And all the important news and discussion topics.
Listen, if the worst place that we put balls is on the script, then you should consider yourself pretty lucky, son.
I mean, you not literally, but figuratively teabagged the script, and I don't know what was in its place. Go to ifanboy.com /about. ifanboy.com/about to see the staff of iFanboy and their social network links. Follow us on twitter.com/ifanboy and stay in touch. Keep in touch on facebook.com/ifanboy.
You can email us at contact@ifanboy.com or you can leave a voicemail at 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697, with your questions, comments, concerns, discussion topics, and farm animal noises. Please do that.
Should we ask for ball picks?
No.
I mean, should you just make it totally weird?
That Connor, you just went to a place that you don't normally go to.
I didn't ask for them. I said, should we ask for them?
I was going to say it depends, but I don't know on what.
No, I'm going to go with no.
Okay.
That's fine.
That's a no-win for us. Anyway.
What if they're concerned about?
Well,
they have a question about like a lump. We're not people to ask.
I know. I think that, in fact, no good can come of that.
Yeah. We're not liable. We're not going to diagnose your lumps, is what we're saying.
iFanboy, we won't diagnose your lumps. We won't diagnose your lumps, : the iFanboy story.
Someone came down the garage, this was years ago, and they said, they were talking about his swole up to the size of a lemon. And he was very, concerned. He wasn't making a joke. He was concerned about it because he would be.
But he went to a garage.
Well, he was in the neighborhood. And so
he wasn't so concerned.
It wasn't his first stop. It wasn't his first stop.
The Montgomery family fixes your truck and also diagnoses your medical problem.
It wasn't his first stop.
Well, your ball-based medical
problem. It was for moral support. And I had to leave the office because my instinct immediately was to say, when life gives you lemons. So that's it for this week's show.
did you used to tour that joke on vaudeville?
Vaudeville, you and Keith Giffen.
It's a Gabe Cotter joke.
Nice.
It's like the end credits of Welcome Back, Cotter.
How old are you?
It was on Nick at Night when I was that age that you would watch Welcome Back, Cotter.
Let's kick the show in the balls.
It's already kicked us.
I'm Connor.
I'm Paul.
I'm Josh. Thank you for listening.
How are your balls, Josh?
Fine. I don't want to go
relatively.
I don't want to go so far as to say they're good, but I can't say I have any complaints.
All right.
God, now I got to go to the doctor.
I used to do a really good Travolta impression from Welcome Back, Cotter. The one that was like a very special? He was like, give me drugs.
Because nice.
He was pretending to be a junkie.
Right.
And that's what he thought junkie said. He was like, give me drugs. There's only like 7 episodes, so that's not true. There's more than that.
I'm pretty sure there's more than 7 episodes.
There's like 70 episodes or something. I don't know.
It ran in syndication for my entire life. It means I got to have at least 100. Usually.
There's like 7 episodes of that one Gordon Ramsay show, and they keep showing that on ABC America.
Which one?
The one with the purple. The actual English one.
The restaurant one?
Kitchen Nightmares?
I would imagine it. They're all restaurant ones. He's a cook.
Welcome back, Cotter, went for 4 years.
26
They stretch out 7 episodes over 4 years?
It did 95 episodes.
Used to be, I guess it's not 100 episodes anymore. Used to be.
I think the classic shows, they sort of fudge it.
I'm Paul.
I'm stopping the recording. Just.